Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Your first one's on us. Hey, everybody, you're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm your host, Mark Riccadonna. With me, as always,
Richie Byrne.
Your producer, Soul Joel.
Oh, boy. We may say it every week.
Every week we say it's a very special guest. It's our thing. But this time,
We've never meant it more than now.
This is the real deal specialty.
I think even more special than Dr. Oz. We've had Santa Claus.
We've had
Dr. Oz. This is bigger.
Brian Regan is here?
This is bigger.
Actually, I want you to introduce him because you told the story how he got you into doing
the
warm-up.
The king of warm-up.
You should do the
warm-up. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, the incomparable. Joey Cola.
Hello.
I don't know what incomparable means.
Incomparable. You can't compare it to anything. How effed up I am. You can't even compare it to anything.
There's no one to compare him to.
Like, you can even go, hey, maybe he's close to Seinfeld or something like that. A piece of wood or a rock or
he's
a chicken.
Wood.
Maybe he's, does he look like a chicken? Is he close to a chicken?
Well,
like a turkey's close to a chicken.
He had the biggest entrance we've ever had.
He does have chicken legs.
Oh my God.
Do you remember
when you
were there? We were at
Valley Forge Casino.
We're always talking about Valley Forge. We were at Valley Forge Casino, and I stopped down to see him. Joey was headlining, and Joey's in the casino getting food. Shocker.
Yeah.
And
he's in
shorts and a t-shirt, these skimpy shorts.
Yeah.
And I was like, we get up to leave.
He looked like Miami Vice came back on the air.
I go, what's up with your legs?
Dude.
He's got this big belly and these skinny fucking legs. Look at his legs.
Put your finger around my thumb. Put your finger around my ankle. No, down that lower. That holds up everything. That's the scaffolding. That's the scaffolding that holds it all up.
He's got me grabbing his ankles.
Here's the thing. I'm just glad I'm not grabbing my own ankles.
You just
show his legs and you say this is an A-list comic. So like you go, Gilbert Gottfried.
There you go.
So
one time at the brokerage, you came in with, boat shorts on.
Well, he pulled his shorts up, Mark, when he was leaving. And he started doing this dance. And all of a sudden, these two African-American women are coming by. They're like, ah!
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Anything in the arsenal is going to get a laugh. I don't care if they're laughing at me or with
me.
He
didn't care.
As long as
they
the end result is a laugh.
It didn't even matter if the show had been over for 3 hours.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter. When you're awake, you should be making them laugh.
Now.
I love it.
How we start every show.
Right. I forgot. Okay.
We always go off on
a drink
tangents.
Of choice.
I wanted to go right into stories, but we can't do that.
And you do drink. But you're not a big drinker.
You're not like a
two or three drinks. No, two or three drinks and I'm done.
Right.
When we worked together, we didn't drink at all because
remember that drink?
What was the drink that you, me, and R.C. Smith, shout out to R.C. Smith, went to lunch at that brisket place?
And you talked about the shot they have. Honey Jack. Just a Honey Jack.
No, it was grape soda. There was grape soda.
It was called a man child. It was black cherry soda and
that
bourbon. Begins with a B. It's Boston. Something Boston. What is it?
Bolton.
It's something like that.
Well, it was bourbon.
Some kind of bourbon.
Cherry.
And black cherry soda.
Black cherry soda.
Yeah. So, Dr. Brown's. You got to have a Dr. Brown's.
So he's telling
RC and I about the. We got to go.
Yeah.
Oh, they do the shot. We're going to have the shot. So we go. We order food. We sit down. They bring us the shots. We do the shots. We're eating. We're talking. A few minutes later, the waitress comes up. And I had said I had a show that night at Dangerfield.
Yeah.
And so a few minutes later, the waitress comes up and goes, you guys want another shot? And RC and I are like, yeah, yeah. And he goes, you guys doing another shot? Like, you would have thought it was our 12th shot the way he acted.
I get wet.
And he's like, not for me, man. Not for me, man.
I'm very sensitive to alcohol. Like, I think it digests on my mouth. It's like, I never had a cavity. You know that? I never had a cavity. Because my saliva is so freaking strong, it's like battery acid. But I think my mouth is so sensitive that as soon as anything gets in, it digests right away. You know, digestion starts in your mouth. Like, as soon as something hits your lips, that's where it starts. And then it starts breaking down as you go down here. By the time you get
speaking
to the lower
Dr. Oz,
there's nothing left.
That's why your legs are so skinny.
That's right. Nothing gets
no
there.
No nutrients.
Nothing gets there. All right, how we start every show.
But he says...
Did we start yet?
I did like a whole preamble. This is a heavyweight bout, and someone got knocked out in the first minute.
What I felt funny preamble. Was he turns to me and goes, don't you have a show tonight? Like, yeah, it's 2:00 in the afternoon. The show's at 10. It's Dangerfield.
It's more of a red flag.
I don't do laundry if I got
and
a show
RC
that
and
night.
I were making fun of you so much. It was like, God, what a lightweight. And he would not do a second shot. Mm. So anyway,
you're a bad drinker when your wife tells you to drink. You know what I mean? My wife tells me, "Would you go get drunk, please?" No, I can't. I'm busy. I'm busy trying to make you happy. So I'm trying to do.
So what's your drink of choice, though?
My drink of choice would be I like rum. Rum is my thing. A rum and Coke, rum and root beer, or a sweet, you know, a dark and stormy ginger beer with Gosling dark rum.
Yeah.
Boom! I put that in.
What was the old shot you did? That sweet
Irish Mist.
Irish Mist.
Yeah, yeah. We've done many
Irish Mists in our day. Yeah.
I think we did. I remember one night at the brokerage, we did about a half a bottle of that.
Yeah, you and me. Yeah.
Yeah, sweet. You kept going, sweet. And I go, I love it. I love it.
Yeah,
love
you
love
turned
it.
Me on Irish. Yes, I was
that's
drinking.
How you get drunk.
Let me tell you.
In Lancaster, I bet Kevin got it from you. He saw the bottle and he's like, Irish Mist.
Yeah.
And he started drinking it.
That's my thing.
I had the worst hangover of my life.
Because of the sugar.
Sugar and alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're off the keto diet that day. I'll tell you when
there's
you're
doing no
Irish
keto
Mist.
In me.
Keto!
So then.
So what do we do? We do a drink and
now,
then what else?
You got to tell a street joke.
Do a joke because no one's laughed yet.
All right. A street joke. Before we start. This is the preamble.
This isn't even making the air.
Can I tell you a joke down my raritone?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Guy goes to the urologist, and the urologist says, you know, it's not normal to get an erection during your typical exam. So the guy goes, I don't have an erection. Doctor says, yeah, but I do. You got to say it like Vinnie Mark would, though. Yeah, but I do.
Shout out to Vinnie Mark.
Shout out to Vinnie Mark.
There you go. That's funny. I did Judy Gold's podcast, and every time a Jew is mentioned, she hits a bell. She's like anytime a Jewish name is mentioned, like if I go, I saw Adam Sandler, ding. You know what I mean? I was Ruth Bader Ginsburg, ding. You know?
Because I'm always talking about the two of them together.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. Just ding. So with you guys, it's comic. Shout out to.
It's like it's 12:00 in the middle of town.
I want to talk about this man a little bit.
All right, now we're in the show.
Right.
We passed the two things, and now we're in the show.
You passed the test, Joe.
Yeah.
You can continue on.
Thank you.
We've been friends a long time.
Long time.
Very long time. And if you knew Joey in the 90s, I have a gift for you. I have a little Christmas gift for you.
A Christmas.
Yeah,
gift.
I want you to open it. Even though the show airs after Christmas,
right?
I haven't seen you.
Okay.
So, and I will explain the gift after he opens it. There are two things. Here's the thing I want to tell you about Joey Cola. He's a great gift guy. He comes up with great ideas for gifts for people. I suck at it. I suck at it terribly. I'll just get you like a cream and that's it. You know what I mean? Like
a cream.
Yeah, like
cream puff.
You know,
well, let's just skip over that.
So, you know, like Bed Bath and Body, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You actually put
moisturizer.
You
know, like it sears.
Bed Bath and Rich's
right.
Body.
And it's actually Bed Bad and Beyond. So, I saw this in the store.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to out Joey Cola.
Wow.
So, and there's two.
Oh, we're really talking this thing up.
There's two, and you guys won't understand, but he will.
It's a Joey Koala doll.
So I want you to open this.
Now?
Yes. On the air.
Right now on the air?
Oh, my God.
I wrapped it myself.
Yeah, I like that.
See what it is.
Oh, boy.
Ah! How great a gift is that for you?
The Bob Ross, the joy of painting sticky notes. A It's a little tiny book. No. It's like 5 inches by 5 inches.
Now, if you don't know,
enjoy a painting. Look at
do
that.
Do you know who Bob Ross?
Yeah, yeah. But Joey's voice might as well have said, "It's what I always wanted."
No, yeah. Because let me explain something. He taught me.
Yeah, Bob Ross, the painter.
Okay. Well, okay. Am I not going fast enough for you, Joel?
No, you asked me if I knew who it was.
Right. He taught me.
That's great.
I like that you thought he was ahead of you. He's five steps back from where you were.
Move on. That's move on. Great. I know, isn't it? Now,
I'll tell you a story about him when you're done.
Joey taught me how to do warm up and probably stand up too. And because all I was doing was doing you for the first 10 years of my life. So he used to do a bit about Bob Ross that was so famous. It was incredibly famous. He would imitate Bob Ross. It was his closing bit. It was phenomenal how good it was.
It's Howard Stern's favorite bit.
Yeah. And Howard Stern told imagine that. Yeah. And Joey was known for this. When I first started, Joey was the Bob Ross. Everyone knew Bob Ross. But when Joey got me into warm-up, he said, "Your best friend in the world is going to be your notebook. You have to have a little notepad." And he walks around with a notepad. So I found a Bob Ross. See, he always has the notepad.
Always.
And he's
two
absolutely
pens,
right.
Two pens and a Sharpie marker.
And he's absolutely right, though.
38 years, my friend. Every day. Every day. But you can't put that in your pocket, though. You got to have it.
Yeah, you got to have it. No, so
Or your attaché case.
So I go on every Oz show. I have my notepad. I have two pens. But the fact that I found a sticky notepad book of Bob Ross.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's your old bits beating you new bits.
I love you, buddy.
I'm hugging you. I'm hugging you.
There's a hug.
I'm hugging you.
There's a hug.
There's a hug. Thank you so much.
Your old material giving you new material.
Yeah. There it is.
I like that, Mark Riccadonna.
I used to watch the show and fall asleep. It was the greatest thing.
Yeah,
I love it.
You know what I mean?
Show.
You remember
watch
him?
You fall asleep.
Little bit of blue, little bit
and,
of blue.
And I did a bit where I flipped him out and he had a Nam flashback because he was a Nam sniper. He was a sniper in Nam.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he died of cancer. But I did the bit.
Aside from that, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, 1990.
It was Agent Orange.
1993,
cancer.
I think I did it on MTV Half Hour Comedy.
I saw
the clean version.
You did, and I was there.
Were you there?
No, it was VH1.
VH1, I did it again. I did it like three times on television.
Because do you remember when we did VH1 and OJ ran? We could talk about that later.
Yeah, where were we? At the Seaport when Caroline?
No, we were out at
Rascals?
LA. Ice House.
Oh, and Brewer was out there too with us that time. Yeah, I think Brewer was there too.
Let's not jump ahead.
But, okay,
let's stay here.
So anyway, I wrote the bit where
this could be the next podcast.
I figured this guy is so out of it, you know, he's a Nam sniper. You know, what if he flipped out and had a flashback while he was painting?
I love this.
And I did it.
I ran it by Adam Ferrara.
Adam Ferrara added a couple of taglines to it. But it became like a big thing, and Stern saw it, and he said to Jackie, "Who's the comic that does that bit? I just saw him do it on television." And Jackie said it was me, and they actually told Kinison, and Kinison was coming in. I was leaving Catch a Rising Star when it was at Bally's, and Kinison came in a day early with Malika and Sabrina just to see the bit.
Now, think about this. We dropped names like Joe Starr. He's dropped Adam Ferrara, Howard Stern.
Dom Ferrara.
That this man has lived. That's my point.
I'm calloused.
That's my point.
I'm blown up. That's why I don't care anymore. I don't care with my ankles, my dick. I don't care. I don't care. I just don't care.
Nothing from the waist down.
Oh, hemorrhoids, and I got. I don't care. I just don't care. And that's when you're truly vulnerable.
Tell them about Sam Kinison.
Kinison was there that night, and he saw me do the bit, you know? So we go backstage when now it's a sports book or whatever. We come backstage, and he's already high. And I knew Sam because I had opened up for him a couple times at Rascals and Jimmy's Comedy Alley. When he came to the East Coast, he always wanted like four guys or five guys to be the Outlaws. So it was Alan Steven, it was Schubert, it was Mitchell
Shout
Walters.
Out to Jimmy Schubert.
And Mitchell Walters. It was when at East Coast, nice. If one of the two of them couldn't make it, Carla Bove, then I would come in.
You'd jump in.
So, yeah, I'd jump in. So I kind of knew him, but he said, "Who's the guy? You got to go see this guy." And then I wound up opening up for Kinison a few more times on the East Coast after that. But But we go backstage. You got Malika and Sabrina there. And when Kinison, he had the coat on and everything.
I imagine even in the audience, they're wearing like the teddies. Yeah,
that's stockings. That's what I was just gonna say. They're still when they're out in public, they were like dressed to the max.
Oh my God. If you don't know what Joey's talking about,
those
Google
two,
it.
Who's yeah. two girls?
His two girls.
Sisters. Yeah. They were sisters. Okay. Yeah. But I think you know.
I didn't know that there were names, but I know exactly who he's talking about.
They were sisters or cousins or something. I still don't know the exact really. But he was banging both of them, and they were always together.
No.
Their tits were always out. It was like a mess. So
it was a show, big production.
Yeah. So he offers me an 8-ball right away. He goes, "Hey man, come on, let's go over to my room." He goes, "Let's party up, man. Let's party up." So he goes, "What's your wife into? Is your wife into that?" And I don't even think I was married. I was just girlfriend at the time. So and I go, "Into what?" He goes, well,
"Into
get high.
What?
Get high and fuck around like that." And I go, "What do you mean?"
And Lee was with you?
Yeah, she was with me. She's backstage. She's down. She's right there. And I go, "What do you mean, fucker?"
Goes, does my answer hinge on other gigs?
He goes, he's like, "Look, man, look." He's like pointing to the girls at to me, and he's like, "I was like, yeah, whatever happens, happens." I go, "Sam, I got to be honest with you. I appreciate it. I don't want the coke. I don't want the thing.
I appreciate you wanting to fuck my wife."
I said, "Yeah," but I said,
"Thank you."
I said, "If my dick by mistake came rubbed up against you in any way, it would go up in my spleen, and I wouldn't be able to get a hard on for the rest of my life." I go. So I said, "Thank you." And then he started laughing at that. He goes, "All right, man, we're going to go party. I'll see you later, man." And then he went out into the Vegas night. And I had the blessing of having Sam come to see that bit. He goes, "Oh, killer bit, man, killer bit." And that was it. And I did it a few more times, but I haven't done it in a while. People are asking me to do it, but it's not politically correct now.
Yeah,
I don't need a letter written. So.
Yeah, but now certain clubs that he would do it in would actually have sound effects ready.
Really? Right,
like
some of them, yeah.
Like he goes, "I was in the jungle. I was in Nam."
Yeah. And
all of a sudden, you'd hear like a helicopter.
Yeah. Well, I had a comedian named Steve Morrison, who's like the guy, the big guy. He's a big Philly radio guy now. Something, Preston and Steve. Steve Morrison. He's from Long Island. I did an improv group with him. And every once in a while, he would be at the shows. We'd do
shout
that.
Shout out to Preston and Steve.
Well, that's the biggest name you could drop in Philadelphia.
They got a 28 share or something like that. So he'd be off stage with a side mic, and I'd be doing the painting bit, and he'd be like making sound effects off the side. You know, it was great. It was great. So,
what was the second gift? I thought you said you had two things.
I did. I don't have a second gift.
No, I just said the one.
It was a Hershey
bar.
Oh, no,
the two things. I meant two things. Bob Ross and a notepad combined.
There you go.
My bad.
So
he saw me. Bob Ross actually saw me do it on MTV and sent me a letter. I got the letter in my attic.
He painted the letter.
No, he didn't paint the letter. He typed the letter and then hand signed it. I'm very flattered that you did.
Which
did
is cool.
Really cool.
Because I mean,
he could have taken it the wrong way.
Yeah.
I know. I always did.
He was so nice, and then he sent me a letter, and he died of cancer.
Now he looks like every single guy in Brooklyn.
He looks like he's got a 3-piece band.
So this is great.
He's gonna perform in Williamsburg.
If you're young and you were listening to this, you have no idea who Bob Ross is, Sam Kinison, which is amazing.
I just said to a comic recently, I was mentioning Kinison. His name came up, and the kid goes, "Who's that?"
Yeah, imagine.
Yeah,
quick comedy. So,
I just was talking to two girls at work about getting drunk with Rodney Dangerfield.
Right.
And I'm telling the story, and and all of a sudden, halfway through, I go, "You guys have no idea who Rodney Dangerfield is."
No clue.
No
they
idea.
Have a clue. Do your homework.
I think that book, The Comedians, that I was reading, I think that's required reading, that if you even want to be in this business in any aspect in comedy, you better read
in
that
In all fairness,
book.
The girls I was talking to weren't comedians. So, I mean,
We know who, like, we even know who, like, Buster Keaton was and and
true.
Groucho and, and all of that. We know that.
I was just talking to Joe about the Marx Brothers the other day. I was telling him, go watch their movies.
Yeah,
go
Duck
watch
Soup.
The
Duck
Marx
Soup
Brothers.
Still stands up.
Oh, my God.
Tremendous.
Oh, my God.
Tremendous.
Oh, my.
It's funny. We've all gotten close to Schubert, and I was just working with him last weekend. And he doesn't talk about Kinison or anything like that, but knowing that was his mentor, you could see a lot of influence in his act on Kinison. Like, he's not even trying to emulate him, but it's just because...
Every comic has that.
Right.
Every comic has that.
For me, it's you.
Now, get out of here.
Really? Absolutely.
Thanks,
is
man.
You.
Thank you. Well, thank you. That's very flattering.
Back
you.
In the 90s...
I mean, you're your own guy
well, but
more than anybody.
Back in the early 90s, when I first met you, me and about I could name 10 other comics. We were all trying to do you on stage. Well, I'll name one because I don't think Rich Guzzi,
yeah,
who's now a hypnotist.
He's a hypnotist.
Oh, you bring him up all the time. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But we, yeah. I mean, I remember just my, not that I was doing your act, but my energy was trying. And I'll tell you a great story.
Are you going to tell
Joe Starr?
No. I was going to say, please tell, because he talks about you working for the first time at Grandpa's in Staten Island. And why he doesn't do this to his openers now. He never says, you can't talk about this.
Oh,
a lot of headliners are no.
You should be able to follow somebody doing your exact act.
Yeah, right. here's
you know, he was sweating bullets.
Let me tell the story. Here's what happened. I'm gonna do Grandpa's. It's like 1990. When did you win the Atlantic City?
It was your first paid weekend. You said.
Yeah, I think it was. Was it, you won that contest?
K-Rock Comedy Riot.
Yeah.
And Kevin James won it the year before me. And then I won it in 1992.
So it was 1992. He had just won that contest. You were on K-Rock that day. We were doing a Thursday, I think, or a Friday at Grandpa's.
Right.
I never met you. I think it was the Turtles. I think it was Flo and Eddie.
Flo and Eddie, yep.
Flo and Eddie with
Howard Stern. Yep.
And they were interviewing, and they're going, he's going to be at Grandpa's tonight. And it blew me away that you were on the air. Like, I thought that was the coolest thing, you know, that I was working with this guy tonight. So I had just gotten into comedy, and a lot of people in entertainment were telling me, comics are jerk-offs. Watch out for comics. Guys are going to try and steal your act. Blah, blah, blah. Guys this, guys that. So I walk in. He's the headliner. I remember Brian McFadden was the middle. I even remember that. And I said, and I'm the opener. And I have 15 minutes. That's right. All I got.
Joey has to follow. Don't worry, be happy.
I got 15. Now, who am I?
Brian Scott McFadden.
Right. So I'm. So I go up and I have a bit about Michael Bolton. I have a bit about this. Every bit I have, he goes up later and does the same bits. Not the same material.
Different twists.
But I'm sitting in the back going, he's going to make me cut that. He's going to make me cut that. I must have said it 12 times. And I'm like, I'm fucked because this guy's going to tell me not to talk.
He cuts my legs on Friday. I have no material Saturday.
I have no material. And a lot of the stuff I was talking about was music shit where back then I was singing, which got me through a lot of time. So he comes off and he goes, hey, man, we got a lot of the same bits. And I'm like, here we go. And he goes, do yours. Yours are better. And I was blown
It's your
away.
Filter. That's your filter. It's this material coming through your filter. And this material can come through my filter.
And that's what he said to
when
me.
When we just worked in South Carolina, I said to you, we had something that
turtles.
Kind of
we the about turtle thing. Turtles and
but I just said I'm going to refer to yours.
Yeah.
In other words, if you do it and I refer to it, I'll go. Mark was just talking about that. Same thing happened to me in this way.
But that's what he cool, did every you know? Show. That's what
Segway.
He did it. And I learned so much at such an early, because every show, he still went up and did the bits. And he went, Richie was talking about bang. And he blew the room away. And it just looked like we were working together in tandem. And I was like, that is so goddamn cool. And
you pulled the marathon. Did you keep doing the marathon? You did it, right? All week?
Yeah.
You still did it all week. Okay. Because I just worked with somebody who I had that situation with. And they were like, oh, man, we got the similar thing. So I go, just do it anyway. But he goes, no, I'll pull it. But I don't really want anybody to pull their bits.
Right.
Like someone.
The only reason I wouldn't know if it's because I sell the shirt and I needed the money.
Yeah, of course. I mean, but you should be able to follow somebody doing your exact act.
I agree.
You can't
You can't steal you.
I can't be you.
Yeah, nobody can. Nobody can.
And sometimes I don't even think I can be
Well, I tried for a long time to be you, and then I found my own voice.
There was a guy.
Which is what most comics do. When you're starting out, you find somebody you really want to emulate.
And you're just struggling because all you want to do is get laughs and get through yourself.
Yeah, which is why I always tell young comics, don't emulate someone dirty. Don't be dirty up front. Learn how to be a comic first, and then be dirty.
Don't emulate Emo Phillips, because everyone will know.
Jim Norton used to do bits about London Bridge is falling down and shit like that. And, you know, I mean, he didn't go up and go, so I'm sorry, I get my dick sucked about. You know what I mean? That came later.
Yeah. Everybody emulates somebody. My influence is when people say, who are your biggest influences? I say Richie Minervini, Rich Jenny, Richard Pryor, and Don Marrero, those first. But then I used to see Bartlett religiously, Nelson religiously, Peter Bales.
Yeah.
You know, I used to watch these guys, Chris Rush. I used to watch even Bobby Collins. I used to watch them, Woodsy. I used to watch all these people, and I used to go, holy shit, look at it. They're making money. Why, that guy made $100 that night. How'd he make that $100? By being that, by doing that. So then I also knew that when I injected my own anger, because I would go on stage and I would get mad at people throwing me off. Like when we prepare for a show, I got to have this much sleep. I got to drink this much water. I need this much chocolate. I need to have things perfect, because or else my show is going to be messed up.
Any outside force,
whether it's wife, kids, aunt, uncle, grandfather, whoever it
is, brother-in-law,
that messes that up. That's right. That's where I'm going. That messes that up. You're hurting me. You shot me in the head. You're hurting my living, and you're now my enemy.
Not enough water. Shot me in the head. Maybe a little extreme.
Boom. So I get on stage and I'll go, that's where I go, my brother-in-law's an asshole.
Right.
Because I came right from that, and I went right on stage right after that. Because you want to know the behind the scenes on that? Asshole goes and buys a house he can't afford, and there's a big hole in the backyard because the guy who bought it before was a playboy, had carpet in the room, mirrors on the ceiling, the bed on a riser up into the corner, and he dug a hole in the backyard to put a pool, and the guy never put the pool in. That's the house my brother-in-law buys. Right? So he buys that, and he's got no friends, nobody to fix the hole. So guess who's got to fix? Guess whose wife comes to him and says, can you do me a favor? He has nobody to fix the hole. Can you fill in a whole built-in pool hole? And he's going to have the dirt dropped off. Can you shovel it in by hand? A month in August, 18 years ago. So there's me, happy dickhead, shoveling one shovel at a time, putting the dirt in the hole. And I'm throwing cement block. I'm throwing everything in there. So I'm super duper angry. My father helped me. My brother helped me. A couple of my friends came over. But where's he? He's out. Well, I don't know what he's doing. So there I am, shoveling this hole, filling in the hole, right? And then after the hole, I go in the house and help my father-in-law do electrical stuff and pull carpet off the ceiling this guy had. Shag carpet on the ceiling around mirrors. This is the house he bought, right? So now I'm doing all this work. I'm sweating like crazy. So I got two brother-in-law. The other one shows up. The one's worse than the next.
The other guy, not the one who owns the house.
The one who owns the house. God knows where the guy who owns the house is. And then the other one shows up with my mother-in-law, and they walk on it. My wife went out and bought us McDonald's. So I'm eating a cheeseburger. It was a yellow wrapper as the cheeseburger. So I eat the wrapper, and I put it on the top of I eat the burger, and the wrapper's on top of the car, and the wind blows it onto the front lawn, right, where we just raked and everything. So the wind blows it. So I say to my other brother-in-law, can you pick that up and put it in the garbage? He goes, he's skinny. He can't hardly talk. He just goes, I ain't picking that up. And I go, what? He goes, I ain't picking that up. Like that. And I go, really? So in front of my wife and my mother-in-law, I grab him by the neck, and I go, pick it up.
Like a kitten.
I make him pick it up, throw it in the garbage, and I go, I'm out of here. I jump in a car. I go, your mother will drive you home. So I jump in a car, and where am I going to go to get this out? It's either you could buy a gun and kill five people, or you go to a comedy club and kill all of them. That's right. So I jumped on a stage, and I went, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. My brother-in-law's a friggin' asshole. And
I love when you do that.
Everybody does. If people go to me, do you know Joey Cola? And I'm like, yeah. They go, is his brother-in-law really an asshole? Yeah. Like, people will say that. Yeah. And there's no joke. Like, he doesn't tell that story.
Yeah. I'm just telling that story.
Because it's simmering. Here's my act. Here's the act going here. Yeah. And I'm behind that. Yeah. But I'm so manic that I have many trains going. Yeah. Look, it's not one track. There's all the tracks are going at the same time.
But you break the fourth wall and go, I have no joke for that. I was just trying to get some shit off my chest.
I had to get it off, and I do. Now because there's anger behind any good joke.
The topping on the whole cake is... both his brother-in-laws fight over who's about.
They wanted to be them.
No, really?
They fight over.
They want to be the asshole.
You know, he's talking to me, and he's talking about me. No, he's talking about me. That's how stupid they are. And then I got a shirt. I sold shirts. I got 100 shirts that says, my brother-in-law's an effing asshole. I got 100. I sold out the first show, $20 a piece. I sold them all out. But I made my one brother-in-law make sure he got it. He got the shirt. He wears it. Like, he wears it. And he goes, I'm the asshole.
He wears it.
He wears it.
Did he ask you to autograph it on the back like a jersey, brother-in-law?
He also has a shirt that says, I'm with stupid, and it's pointing down.
Yeah, there you go. Right to his head, it's pointing like that. I'm surrounded by it. I'm surrounded by it.
Can you believe all these years people have been talking about his brother-in-law as an asshole, and he actually told us the story on
That's the story.
Oh, my God.
That's the story behind the bit.
Can you?
Stories behind the bit.
Can you? Do you remember the story about Bob Woods getting in a fight? Jumping off the stage.
I was there. I was emceeing that night.
Can you tell that story?
Well, let's set up Bob Woods.
But yeah,
did you know Bob Woods?
No.
You never met him?
No.
You know Bob Woods?
I don't know him. But I'm like a complete history like idiot with comedy.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember the very first time I went out to Governor's, they used to have those big paintings.
Yeah, and Bob Woods.
And I said, who's the Jerry Garcia looking guy?
Bigger than life. He was bigger than life. He was the Springsteen.
He was a Long Island comic.
Springsteen of Long Island comic. Broke.
Always broke.
Always smoking pot, always drinking, fun partying guy. Lived in his car. He looked like Captain Kangaroo with curly blonde hair.
He did.
But he was exactly Gleason. He was exactly Ralph Cramden.
I think Kevin Downey Jr. looks like Captain Kangaroo
this guy,
right now.
This guy looked exactly like him. I have pictures that I can show you. Tom and Jigno, whatever picture that he can show you, whatever. But he was a big character, larger than life. 300 pounds, 350 pounds, 6'4". When he walked into a room, everybody turned. No matter, you could have God could be here, and you'd go, Woodsy, like that. And he was sharp, and he was, you got to get him in the right mood. Because if he was in a bad mood, everybody suffered. He punched Al Spear in the face for saying hello to him one night. Chicky, he was like, hey, Woodsy, how you doing? Yeah, boom, and he would just like hit you. So you had to be on your toes. Yet the guy couldn't rub two nickels together.
I interject one thing?
Yeah.
He also got some of his material stolen.
Who did?
Bob Woods.
Oh, yeah. Well,
can we talk about that or not?
I don't know exactly what you're talking about, but...
We'll talk later. Go ahead.
I wanted to hear it.
That was I don't know.
Didn't
about,
he do the Norton and Cramden
thing? Oh, yeah, the Cramden thing. Yeah, that was, Murphy was in, Murphy was in the clubs at that time, too,
right.
and he was influenced. Everybody was influenced by Bob Woods because he was such a big personality. Anyway, so I was like the young MC and kid who would drive everybody. I was the Long Island kid who knew from Peter Bales telling me, because Peter Bales was the only other guy to come in the city at this club, the comic strip, and work with Reiser and Seinfeld and all those guys.
Shout out to Peter Bales.
Yeah. And he would come in the city, and he's the one who told me years ago, dude, you can't make a living on being on Long Island. You got to come to the city. And then once you do the city, you got to go to Jersey, you got to go to Connecticut, and then do the country. That's if you want to be your name. So I knew
now they
early.
Think they can make a living
they
on Long
They think
Island.
They all want to be Dave Attell and Amy Schumer, and it's going to happen overnight,
but I mean,
and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, so Woodsy and I would MC, and I would drive him everywhere. You know what I mean? So Woodsy, he's 350 pounds, 6 foot whatever, and I got a little 85 Nissan Sentra, two-door. And I got Lance Montalto. I don't
Lance
know if you remember.
Lance Montalto. I couldn't remember who it was.
He was the middle act. Yeah, he was the middle act.
Right.
And I'm emceeing.
So, I haven't seen him in
the
years.
Week before, Betty's Fireside Tavern is
one of the worst clubs. The worst.
Probably the worst. Pips was bad. Pips was tough in its day because of its Brooklyn location.
Yeah.
Consistently tough. And I got a good Pips story, too, that Rogan
I got a good Betty's Fireside story.
So,
but go ahead.
But I had a guy with a gun on his lap. But anyway, I drive Woods. I pick him up, and it's a little Nissan Sentra, and the car is already like this. We're just driving him there. It's a four-cylinder, like, just to get to the gig up in Belleville, New Jersey, or wherever it is, right?
Boy.
Now, this place was a restaurant. It's a house. It's a house. But it's a restaurant / strip club /
So it's at Betty's?
It was at Betty's Fireside Tavern.
I didn't realize
it
was at Betty's.
The week before.
It's one of those places where it's like
Dennis
the guy
Ross.
Got kicked out of every bar in town. So he goes, all right, my house is the new bar.
That's like that. But back it was like from the 1940s, right? The house was built in the 40s. But Dennis Ross booked it, and we all love Dennis. And Dennis used to book us all a lot. So I picked up Woodsy and Lance. I think I picked up Lance at the Improv in the City. And we took off. And we get there. We get to the gig, and the week before, Steve O, who's Steve Oakes now.
Oh, wow.
I said, Steve, how do I conquer this gig? Because it's my turn now, and I'm hearing nothing but bad thing. He says, if you got one of those boat foghorns, bring that. Because they're 9 deep at the bar, no cover charge. Now, you walked in the back room. There was a restaurant in front and a kitchen over, like, behind a dining room. But then there was a big bar, like, where I guess a living room used to be. And it was this, like a horseshoe bar.
Yeah.
And the horseshoe was against the wall. And you performed behind the bar.
Behind the bar.
Behind the horseshoe. And then they were 9 deep, no cover charge. And they were coming in the
crazy
back way. The back door was right here. The front door was right here. The restaurant was over there, but no one was in it.
Right.
It was just
no one ate there.
It was a big Animal House spillover party.
Yes.
Yet, you can still make $50, right? That's
right.
How I was getting MC,
well,
$50.
On like a Tuesday night.
Yeah, something like
great.
That.
That was great.
So we get there. I park in the front, like across the street. We get into this thing, and Dennis Ross is there, and he goes, "Listen, do the show. I gotta leave, and I'll be back in like 10 or 15 minutes to pay you guys, and just start the show." So now it's already a noisy room. People are already arguing. Women, it was like you know, in What's a Wonderful Life when he comes back and he's not born and he goes back to Potterville. That's what it was. He goes, you know, Violet Bix. Oh, you know, yeah, Violet. That's what it was. It was totally that, right? So I'm on stage and I pull this horn. I get the horn and I got speaker here. Speaker.
Oh, you
here.
Listened. You
I
brought
listened.
It.
I bought the horn and I go, "All right, guys, are you guys ready for a comedy show? You suck." So I go, and I blow out
into the microphone,
right into the microphone, and I blow out the right speaker. So now, from the get-go, we got one speaker.
Oh God!
One man down.
We got a speaker down. Out of two, we got one now.
Oh no!
So the guy who supposedly works there comes.
Oh, we got insurance.
He turns that one way up loud.
Supposedly works.
He turns this one way up loud, right?
Yeah,
so now Woods really needed the money. Whenever he took a gig, like we did the Silver Dollar in New Jersey one time, and there was nobody in the audience, but he did it to get paid. He really wanted to do the gig. He wanted to do his time. To say, "I did my time. I'm getting my money, no matter what."
Right.
I don't care how bad the audience is. I don't care. He didn't care how well he did. Never. You never care how well you do. The thing is, can I stand my ground for this long a time to get my money? I don't care how well I did. That's it. And that's what made us a lot of like really tough in the 80s, because you weren't trying to kill. You weren't trying to do well. If you're lucky, it happened. But you were just trying to stand your ground.
Sounds like Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze.
Oh my God! I'm going to tell you a story about Mulrooney. It was like Roadhouse. So we get there. I get up on stage. I go, "Hey, you guys, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. You suck. Blah, blah, blah." A glass comes flying past me.
Speaking down.
I do like 10 minutes, and I figured that's it. And I go, "Let me bring this other guy, Lance Montalto." I bring up Lance Montalto. He does like 15. He's supposed to do like 20 minutes or a half.
Oh.
He does like 15 minutes, and they're burying him now. Burying him. Because he's a little bit more quiet, more spoken word.
Yeah,
now, do you up to make more time up that 5 minutes or no?
There's no comedy rules. There's no rules.
this is Betty's fire sign.
This is purely survival. There's no making up time.
Joel sitting there thinking like, well, what did the show manager think?
Yeah, there is none of that. There's none of that. You might as well be performing in a junkyard. You know what I mean? There might as well be junkyard dogs around. That's what you're performing for. So now, I bring up Lance. Lance eats it. Just eats it. And I get on stage. And you know, you got to walk on stage like this. He's walking off. And I go, "Let's hear it for Lance Montalvo." "Boo, you suck." 9 deep at the bar. I'm telling you. The place got packed because they were just drinking like animals. It was like a big fight, right?
Oh, my God.
It was the end of Blazing Saddles. Toe out your hands. Kick out your... boom. When they came barreling
the
in. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
That's what it was like. Now, I go, "Ladies..." I go, "Woods, you ready?" He goes, "Bring me up, man." Now, Woods has already got a couple of Michelobes in him, right? Because he kind of made friends. Well, he knew the guy at the bar. There was a guy named Joe and 9 of his friends. They were all Jersey sanitation workers. Uh-huh. And they're yelling... He like, you know, when you want to go to a comedy club and go, "Oh, yo, I'm the next comedian." They go, "Oh, good luck," or whatever. Not then. They go. So Woodsy had told this guy, "I'm going up next." "Oh, yeah? Well, you suck. What's funny about you?" Like that.
It's getting heckled before
he even gets on stage. So I bring the guy, I bring Woodsy up, and he's huge. Oh. He's huge. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, Bob Woods. And he starts doing, he did impressions. He did Gleason. He did Popeye gets pie-eyed. And he's doing Popeye. I eats right, I sleeps right, and I rubs olive oil all over me pecker. And he's doing impressions. He's doing Ed Norton. He's doing his whole act. And no laughs. They're just screaming at him, you suck, fat boy. You suck. You're ugly. You suck. But he's huge, right?
But
so,
he's huge.
So anyway, I go. I'm looking at him. I'm going, well, let's go like this. He goes, no. I'm getting my money from the stage. He's going, I'm getting my money. I'm doing my time, and I'm getting my money. Very Gleason like that. So now they're heckling him like they're louder than him now. So he goes, pal. He looks at this guy Joe and his friends. He goes, pal. When I get off this stage, I'm gonna kick the shit out of you and all your friends. So they were, yeah, you're not going to kick the shit out of anybody, but you fat boy, blah, blah, blah. So he does his act. He does more impressions. And I'm going to kick the shit out of you and all your friends. So I'm like, oh, God, because I've been with him when that happens. So he does his act, and he goes, at the very end of his act, he gets up on one foot and goes.
But wait, wasn't he counting down? Like, I got 10 minutes.
Yeah. He was doing that, too. Two more bits. One more bit. And he goes, and he's going like
it's
this.
Like
he
a
goes,
telethon.
He goes, ta-da, I did my 40 minutes. He goes, now we see if I'm going to kick the shit out of this guy and all his friends. So people are, like, throwing drinks already and everything. He comes off stage. I wait. He comes down. Oh, I walk up the stairs. I grab the mic, and I go, let's hear it for, and all you heard was this. You just heard, like this, slapping, like punches being thrown.
Oh, God, I love this.
Just punches what? Being thrown, and women screaming, like women screaming, you motherfucker, screaming, right? And then you hear, like, that tough guy, you heard, like, that tough guy, you can't hit Bobby, and then, like, fight breaks out. I look down.
You're still on stage.
I'm still on stage. I look down, and Woods has got a guy here. He's got a guy. I see a head under his left arm and a head under his right arm. He's got them in headlocks. And he's going like this. He's going whip, whip. And the guy's bodies were flinging around, like being flung. Well, he's got their heads under his armpits. He's flinging guys into other guys. Then somebody punches him. All I see is a punch come right in the face. Boom. And it hits him here, and he starts to bleeding a little bit here, right? So now I'm like, oh, my God. I can't. There's no way I can get off the stage because the fight broke out where the steps are. Girls are fighting now on this side.
Because you're behind the horseshoe.
I'm behind the horseshoe. So this is what I do. I see Dennis Ross come running in the room from the front of the place.
Oh, my God.
And he goes like this. He's going like this. Like down, pointing down. I go, pointing down. What do you want me to do? He goes, come on down. I jump off the stage, dive behind the bar. Like I jumped off the stage, like dove behind the bar. And
like
Dennis, he's
movie.
Paying me on, well, both of us are on our hands and knees. He's going,
paying him.
He goes, 100, 110, 120, 120. Yeah, I got some singles. He's paying me on the floor. So I go, where are you going? He goes, I'm getting out of here. I'm going out the front. He goes, where are you going? I got to bring the car around. He goes, well, I don't know where they are. You know where Lance is? I don't know where Lance is. Woodsy's in a fight. He goes, yeah, I know. Somebody's got to call the cops.
Woodsy's in a fight.
Yeah, so like Dennis is like, I'm going to call the cops. Somebody's going to call the cops. But if you see Woodsy, tell him that, I got to bring the car around the front. So tell him to get out of here. So we both crawl out around the bar. I go in the kitchen. I'm looking for Lance now. I go in the kitchen, and Lance is with a waitress. He's got, like, him and a waitress. They look. I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but it looked like they knew each other pretty well. To the point where the waitress looks at me and goes, can't you see we're busy? And I go, Lance, Woody's in a big fight out there. I'm getting the car, meeting in front. If you can get him, come back out and around. I'm leaving because the cops are going to be here. This is like insane. So I go out and get the car. I'm in front of the place. Lance comes running out, gets in the car. Like 5 minutes later, Woodsy comes out. Shirt's completely ripped. He's got a T-shirt. It's completely ripped. His hair is a mess. He's got dirt on his face. He's bleeding. He's got a Michelob in one hand and a joint in the other. He found out a way to get a joint lit and smoke it as he's running from a fight with a Michelob in his hand. Jumps in the car.
I go, slam the car. And as he slams the door, I go, lock the door. Some girl starts beating on the window of the car. I just hit the gas and we go. We're down the road, like, in the middle of Jersey somewhere, you know, and we're going. We're like 6-7 minutes into the ride, and a pickup truck full of guys starts bumping the back of my car now. Kind of like riding right
like
up.
Mississippi
and I'm
burning.
In a little 4-cylinder Nissan Sentra. Every time he hit, I'm like, boom, boom, boom. He goes, so Woodsy's like, stop the car. I'm going to get out and kick the shit. I go, you ain't getting out nowhere. Stay in the car. I'm going to, so luckily we got to the turnpike and we got home. And that's the Woodsy Betty fireside story.
That's Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Last call.
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.